Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from just outside of New York City and from Ireland, Europe. Andrew Gundling, JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
I don't think I've heard Ireland be described. Ireland, Europe. People just say Ireland, don't they?
No. I exclusively refer to America, North America. I think that's how people do it.
America, NATO.
How are you? How are things over there with your family and the beautiful rolling hills of green?
It's good. It's December weather, though. It's dank. It's drab. It's not cold per se, but it is. How would I put it? Damp. It's moist. There's a lot of rain. Mm-hmm. No, it's great to bring my daughter here. Bring the Brooklyn girl back to where it all began. So yeah, very nice trip. Very good. Eating too much already, big concern. But that is the festive period. I might get to run on a soccer field on real grass tomorrow, Andrew.
Oh, thank God!
That far from the turf of New York City.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I should tell you, JJ, because I know you and the listeners are concerned. I had a brief moment just now when I sat down to do this pod where I forgot that the chair I was sitting in has the San Andreas fault line running down the middle of it, and it almost went fully split. It is already fully split. Like I said, I don't know how it's upright, but I had a moment of true panic where I thought I was going down the middle of it, but it held up, and I am still sitting in the chair. It somehow is working. So how about that?
Your commitment to this potential testicular severing device is admirable.
Yeah. What a fun pod this is going to be. We have I'll say this right now. If you're someone who loves adjudication, then this is the pod for you. We've got Super League. We've got U.S. Open Cup. It's all here, JJ. So we'll talk about those things. Potentially a big development also for Inter Miami with an acquisition that has long been expected, but now seems to be moving a lot closer to being finalized. Lots of news and notes from things happening around Europe. Jurgen Klopp, the owner-in-chief, he can't moan about other things anymore, so he's now moved on to his own club. So we'll get to that and some of his comments.
He's loaded his moan phaser and pointed it at himself.
Yeah. Now, whether or not he's wrong, though, now that therein lies the conversation. So we'll get to some of that. There's a lot. There's a lot going on here. Before we get into all this, I just want to remind everybody, as always, if you were looking for our holiday pod, we did a special video. It's up on YouTube now, so feel free, go check that out. I know our YouTube posts are somewhat few and far between, but check it out up on the Caught Offside YouTube page, because it was a lot of fun. We did all kinds of end of year retrospective type stuff. And I do want to remind everybody too that we are not Caught Offside the website. I think there's even now another Caught Offside podcast. I don't know how to tell people to differentiate between them, but we're this one. So I would love to remind people of that. Rating us always is a huge help this time of year. If you can't find any other way to give to the pod, a 5-star rating would do the trick. So
also,
there you go.
In terms of giving, I should say, the t-shirts are being delivered as we speak. Thanks everyone for a fabulous response. For those people who didn't get one for Christmas, you will be getting yours when we reopen the merch store with lots of other things that me and Andrew are planning. So thank you so much for your support, and send us pictures of you wearing your t-shirt in public surroundings, the gym, your local bar, I don't care. Get as weird as you want, but wear that t-shirt, take a picture, send it to @COSoccerPod on X, X Twitter, whatever we're calling it now, Caught Offside Pod on Instagram. Let us know how you're enjoying the t-shirts.
And also one final message for the animals. I don't know if they've seen this. I don't even know if you've seen it, JJ, but so obviously we have a beautiful, strong, thriving Reddit community on the Caught Offside Reddit page. It's awesome. There's great conversation going on there. But I just came across this from Noah the QB, who posted that a Caught Offside Discord server is now live. He said, I didn't know about this. Maybe you did. He said, greeting fellow animals, with JJ and Andrew's blessing, not mine, although it's fine. He said, we now have an official Caught Offside Discord server. The server is still very much in its infancy. So if there are any changes you'd like to see implemented, please let me know. Looking forward to seeing you over there. So even more places for the Caught Offside animal community to thrive and run free. So feel free to check that out. I tried to log in. I have no Discord experience, so I don't know if what I was doing, I don't know if I did it right or not.
I don't know either. People like it a lot. It seems to be a great another great media for people who are enthusiastic about a variety of different things. It's very, very good. Again, I would request that anyone on there acts respectfully and doesn't turn it into the 4chan of Caught Offside. I'm just always trying to argue against that.
Yes, I'm with you on that. All right, let's get into it. Well, before we do, I will say JJ, like I said, is in Ireland, and he has warned me before we started recording that the internet hasn't really fully made it to Ireland yet, apparently. And so there could be blips, and I'm just going to have to ask all of you out there to bear with him, as I will.
Yeah, I'm in a lovely farmhouse on the west coast of Ireland, but you know, I don't make me go through government policy on broadband in the Republic of Ireland for the past 40 years. Don't make me do that, because it hasn't been good.
All right, let's get into it now then, JJ. No, without further ado, the Super League, it made its triumphant return on Thursday morning here in the US, I guess afternoon in Europe, There's a couple ways to do this. I guess we'll go through first here are the facts of what happened. So all of what went down with regards to the Super League and A22 went to the European courts and basically claimed that UEFA was abusing its position by acting as both a governing body that regulates competition as well as being a competition organizer. And the European courts seemingly agreed. Now, there are caveats with that. Here's what I'll say first off. Had the ruling left enough room for A22 or whatever committee wants to come in and run a Super League, it left enough room for there to be a pathway for that to happen. But it's not quite that clear cut. The whole ruling, JJ, it's something like 200 and something pages, and it's a lot of lawyer speak. Now, neither one of us are lawyers, so we're kind of giving you the human extreme Cliff Notes version. But I will, for everyone out there who is saying that this was a huge win for the Super League and the clubs that want that to form, while that is true, I'm going to read you this important line from Gab Marcotti, who has a really good explainer up on ESPNFC. He writes this. He says, it's not clear cut. To comply with the judgment, UEFA need to have criteria for approval that are reasonable and don't unduly penalize those who want to make new tournaments. So it comes down to what those rules are. So I would say this, JJ, essentially a new Super League would have to, it could exist, but it would still have to be palatable enough for UEFA to sign off on it.
Yeah, and it's not happening. Right. It just isn't happening. This is basically EU law, which is deep, and expansive and manifold. And we, this is, if you live in Ireland, Europe, this is the kind of law that that governs, I suppose, what we'd call maybe like antitrust and competition issues. And basically what they've said is, you know, it gives, as RTE said in their breakdown, what it does appear to do, this ruling, is to give companies like A22 the right to pitch a new football competition and for their application to be judged on criteria which are transparent, objective, non-discriminatory and proportionate. Now, the problem with this is that it's too little too late. What the Super League did was, is that they launched a website and they said, here's the founding members of the Super League. We're going to do a Super League. And they left it at that. They didn't give any detail as to how this was going to go. And then they've decided to formulate a format for a Super League and say that's much more egalitarian, that has promotion and relegation, that's got divisions, and that domestic competitions would still exist. Okay, fine, but nobody wants that. It's over. You had your shot. You absolutely blew it, both in messaging, delivery, and the actual content of what you're going to do. What you're going to do. Your clubs that you need to have involved have no interest in doing it. It's gone. It's done. It's over. And also, UEFA have made so many, basically, how would you describe it, Andrew? Concessions to UEFA's top teams that it doesn't really matter anymore. It's going to forge ahead with the new format, with the group stage system that we're going to see from next season. And that's it. And people are going to try that. Is there never going to be a Super League? No. Probably there is going to be one, but it'll be within, under the control of UEFA. I say control, under the banner of UEFA. And we're seeing it already. We're seeing them attempt to try and make everything change to keep a lot of these clubs who are dissatisfied happy. But right now, your Manchester United, Liverpool, Chelsea, teams like that, they're not going for what A22 is selling. It's too late.
Yeah. I would say at this point, I'm certainly not feeling the fear that we were back in 2021 when the initial Super League announcement was made, when we thought, oh my God, this might actually happen. I think myself and most soccer fans around the world who are primarily interested in European soccer, I don't think you're feeling that same sense of fear right now, because it just doesn't seem like a lot of these clubs have the appetite to go through what they went through last time around. Now, having said that, JJ, so I did look at this new reformatted Super League and try to look at it with open eyes and say, okay, well, what changes did they make to try to make this more digestible and palatable to soccer fans? So the one thing I will say, like you're talking about the way they rolled this out last time around, at least this time they did understand that simply releasing a cold press release with no explanations or press conferences, they understood that that was sloppy and it gave them an immediate L in the PR war. So this time around, it was a little bit different. They have like their video that they released that shows you how the competition would work. They understand that, you know, trying to win hearts and minds does matter. And this is not a soccer community that is just going to blindly follow what the big clubs want them to fall in line with. So there was that part of it. And then the other part, it did feel like they tried to take into account that a competition without a meritocracy is something people have no appetite for whatsoever. However, I want to talk a little bit more about that second point, because what I see with this new reformatted Super League is them trying to be half pregnant. They're trying to make you think that there's a meritocracy in this, but ultimately it's still rigged for their primary clubs, the original Super League clubs, to thrive. So here's the quick explainer if you haven't seen it yet. There's three tiers in the new Super League. Star, which is the top tier with 16 teams. Gold, which is the second tier with 16 teams. And blue, which is your third tier with 32 teams. So there will be some...
Even just the naming of it. I'm looking at the graphic right now. It's still half-assed.
But they're trying, JJ. They're trying.
What division you in? We're in Star.
Yeah.
Are ya?
Yeah, so, I mean, look, is that better than Champions, Europa, and Conference? I don't know, but you know, I don't know. That's for everyone else to judge. So there's some promotion relegation through those tiers. But for me, it's still fatally flawed for a couple reasons. One, like this Super League promotion relegation has very little to do with what you do in league play domestically, except for the third tier. So let's just look at what that actually means, if I'm understanding all of this correctly, which I think I am. Let's assume, JJ, that Girona are not invited to be in that initial group of 16 star Super League teams. But let's also say they go on and win La Liga this year. You mean to tell me that the champions of La Liga will not be in the top division of the Super League next season, or the Champions League? What, like, that's a joke. And thus, with that, even in this new reformatted promotion, relegation, meritocracy, even in that version of the Super League, they have still rendered domestic league play largely useless for the top sides. So, like, if you're a club in the star division, why would you care about anything happening in the Premier League or the Bundesliga or La Liga? Why would you care about that? Those league games are going to be tune-up matches for Super League matches. Barcelona, if I'm understanding it right, Barcelona could finish 12th in La Liga, but I'm assuming they'll be invited into the initial batch of star division sides for the Super League. So if they finish 12th in La Liga, they don't give a damn about what they're doing there. As long as they don't get relegated out of the star division, they'll be in the top flight of the Super League forever. Domestic play, well, useless.
They'll have a star division game on a Wednesday night, and then they'll have a exhibition match against FC Dallas that they've got to fulfill on the Thursday night.
Well, that's a whole nother story. That's a whole nother story.
Madness for them.
But their La Liga matches would matter just as much, because their only aim will be to remain in the star division of the Super League as long as possible. So now, if you've got all of your top sides that drive the interest of domestic play, Liverpool, Manchester United, Arsenal, if all of those teams are being told, it doesn't really matter what you do in the league. If you're in the star division, You play your start of your Super League games on a Wednesday, rest your players at the weekend against Bournemouth. It doesn't matter if you lose that game. So league play, the Premier League, Bundesliga, it's all still, for the big sides, it's all still worthless. Now, if you're a smaller club that wants to move into this, into the third tier, yeah, go ahead, win the Premier League. But your chances of rising through the ranks and getting up to the star division, it has nothing to do with what you do in the league. So for me, as presently constituted, if this is going to be their aim, to do everything in their power to rig a system for the top flight sides and render useless league play, this will never work for me. And I think, and I'd like to believe, I hope that most people agree that the history, the tradition, all of that of league play, I think people care about it more than A22 or these Super League teams than they care to realize. I think I'm in the majority on this.
Even just the words coming out of your mouth. You know when someone's speaking to you and you stop listening to the content, but you listen to the formation of the words. Have you ever been on like a bus ride or a train ride and you're reading a book and you just realize the car and you're just saying the words and you're like, wow, how weird are these words? It's like, oh my God. This is English. This is what I'm speaking here. You stop for a second and you start thinking about the actual thing that you're doing. You know, talking. As you were talking there, I drifted away into that.
Are you high right now?
I started thinking about star. This is because, and it's not your fault, this is just nothing. It's meaningless. It's an attempt by a marketing company to try and create something palatable, because the first time they did it, it was so poor. It was so poorly done. You're right. You're not replacing the European Champions League history, the European Cup history. You're just not doing that. We're discussing this because this is news, but yeah, not because this is anything worthwhile, anything tangible, anything real. It's just nonsense. What happened was, the European Union made a ruling that the way in which UEFA reacted, essentially, to the formation of a Super League was contravened the European Union's competition laws, its business laws, all those things. That's all it did. This is nothing. This is not happening. You know, hey, look at what we're presenting. Who are you? Like, who is presenting this? Real Madrid and Barcelona. Mm-hmm. And they're paying under the guise of A22 Sports. Atleti aren't involved. Nobody's involved. Nobody wants this. There was the slightest bit of a conspiracy theory last night. Liverpool hadn't released a statement on it. And they just did, probably to quell that, saying, yeah, no, we heard what people had to say. We're not doing this again. It's not happening. Just like, even as you explained the league format to me, I was like, league format, gold, star, blue, all nonsense, all irrelevant, all not happening. Now, I honestly think that there are things that will, like, it's much more interesting to ponder. Okay, Super League, just forget about that. But, like, if the Premier League continues its, I mean, how far can it grow? If it continues its dominance, you know, it's not European competition that other leagues and other countries will have to worry about. It's like their very kind of existence. You know, if this vortex of money and interest and media keeps swallowing up all of football, what is going to be left? How will you be able to pay players' wages? How will your players not even be just zipped from your academy before they've even had a chance to line out in Belgium, in France, in Italy? Like, what is the future of European league domestic football while this behemoth swallows everything around it?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that to me is the real interesting thing here. This, you know, talk of breakaway league, Super League. It's like what Colin Miller pointed out. Any new Super League remains an absolute non-starter. English clubs won't join, legal, financial, cultural reasons. German clubs won't join, cultural reasons. PSG won't join, status reasons. Atleti won't join, political reasons. It won't happen. But the stuff that is interesting is that he says the Premier League is lopsidedly economically powerful. Football's current structures reinforce financial imbalances and power structures. But the Super League isn't objecting to barbaric imbalance. It objects to those imbalances not currently favoring them. Like Barcelona and Real Madrid, they were top dogs, and now they're not, and they want to be top dogs again. They're not about raising up the level of European football, making football sustainable across Europe. They don't care about that. They just want their piece of the pie, so they've decided to create their own thing because they can't get in. But the question about the Premier League still remains. What happens? Where do we go from here?
I don't know, but as long as that imbalance exists, where the Premier League, where so much of the money is tilted towards the Premier League, as long as that is the case, then there will be. I mean, look, Barcelona and Real Madrid do still wield a lot of power and interest globally. So, you know, they
will. Not enough, Andrew. Though.
Well, not enough to launch an entirely new league. But like, as long as like they'll continue to work towards something that works better for them. So I don't think that this goes away. This might be another swing and a miss. Ultimately, will be. But I think that there will continually be things. Effort.
I definitely you're right there. But I definitely think now that they're going to pressure, or they're going to try and pressure Seraphim for something else within UEFA. More concessions, more, like, just the same way the top six in the Premier League, they bullied and cajoled the Premier League itself to give them more of the TV revenues. You know, it'll be something, but I just don't see it as a breakaway. But something like, there's no question something needs to be done. But, you know, Real Madrid and Barcelona and A22, they're not gonna solve any of this.
Yeah. No, you're probably right. And I would say that again, the fear that a lot of football fans had in 2021, I don't think you need to be feeling that way right now. I think that there will be attempts to reform, and maybe that's good. Like, I'm okay with, you know, you'd have to help me on this, JJ. When the Champions League was created,
yeah,
from the previous the European Cup, you know, that obviously then changed format and became the present day Champions League, which is it was a significant change.
Big change.
You'll have to help me, because that was a long time ago and I was very little, and it was just not on the radar here in America in the way that it is today. Was there outrage? Was there excitement? Was there cautiousness? Like, what was the feeling when the European Cup format became the Champions League format?
Well, don't forget, there was no Twitter and not every home had internet. So it was hard for people to truly express. There was the old school in football who didn't like the idea of taking out the a knockout competition, meaning that, you know, Dundee could get their way to a European Cup semi-final. Uh-huh. A lot of people didn't like that. There was a lot of people thought, yeah, this is definitely a move towards a kind of an elite. And many people saw it as, you know, a Super League's been talked about for years, at least 30 years. And some people saw it as a step towards that. But I remember it as an overnight change. Like the first European Cup final that I watched was the 91 one. And then all of a sudden the format changed for 92, 93. Like it was a rebranding as well. Mm-hmm. Then there was the music, all that. It was like they went from this is a competition that seemed, you know, like it wasn't branded or unified. The only thing that represented the European Cup was the cup itself, which still remains the same shape. Mm-hmm. But there was no branding. There was no stars in the football. There was none of that. Do you know what I mean? So like it did feel so different when it started. But it was more old school football heads saying, "Well, we don't like this. We don't like the change of the single elimination of the not single elimination, but the
straight to a knockout."
Yeah, exactly. You lose your first round game home and away. You're out. Not that kind of. It was more objections like that. And there was a sense of change in the air. The Premier League, it was about to start, be launched. So there was that kind of that set, and those were steps on the way to what we're seeing now. This argument over quality in football across Europe. So I was 10, so I really don't remember any major, and I certainly wasn't reading, like, I would love to go back and say read someone like Brian Glanville, the European football writer. What did he think? Because he'd been writing for so long at that point about the European Cup. You know, what was he worried about, where this was heading or about the change? But again, with no social media, with nothing to funnel outrage, I don't remember a huge upheaval around that time.
Interesting. All right, so there's your Super League update, everybody.
It's not sure... happening, but I'll tell you, it's 1-0 to them in the European courts.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, and this is probably not the final chapter here. I'm sure that there will be another format change. They're going to keep at this, so this is probably not the end, but for now I don't see it as something that if you're a soccer fan who likes the status quo to at least a certain extent, because like we said, the Champions League format is changing in a way to try and help some of the bigger clubs, but if you like the way things are, I think that you can rest easy right now. Let's move from that, JJ, to more adjudicating, and this time it's here in the U.S., as U.S. Soccer, I guess in this case, sort of the UEFA to MLS's Super League, they respond to MLS's request to have their next pro teams take part in the U.S. Open Cup with kind of a long-winded version of, nah, we're good the way that it is now. Here's the full statement. Major League Soccer, this is from U.S. Soccer Federation, Major League Soccer has requested to allow MLS Next Pro teams to represent MLS in the 2024 Lamar Hunt U.S. Open Cup. After thoughtful consideration, we have informed MLS that the U.S. Soccer staff recommendation, which was adopted by the Pro League Task Force, is that the request be denied. As we move forward, we will continue our review of the Open Cup to ensure it aligns with the U.S. Soccer strategic pillars. We remain committed to addressing the needs and concerns of all of our members, including MLS and other stakeholders, to enhance and improve the U.S. Open Cup. I wonder, when I saw that and was kind of thinking more about this, I'm sure this is not the case, but I'm just going to throw it out there anyway. Do you think JJ MLS always knew that this was going to be the end point, the conclusion to this? They were not going to win this, but they felt like they probably have voiced their concerns over and over again behind the scenes to little avail. And maybe they thought this is the only way to really get U.S. Soccer to listen and to shake things up. in some way to help us. Like if they want to, you know, if they have issue with some of the smaller sides and the venues or the grounds that the competition is played in, things like that, maybe they thought the only way to get real change is to actually threaten to pull all of our teams out, even though maybe they knew it was, that was never going to be the end point. Or am I digging too deep in a web of lies and deception that probably is giving everyone a little too much credit?
No, no, I think you're right. I think MLS wanted to see how far they could push the envelope. They also, like we discussed already this week, they saw how League's Cup could really benefit them. And MLS and Don Garber and everyone involved have long been trying to basically find different and new revenue streams, and League's Cup seemed just like an absolute winner for them, the excitement around it. And they saw something...
That is... Look, the League's Cup, I enjoyed it too, but that's built on such phony logic and foundation. That was the Leo Messi show.
Like, yeah, right. But like they've got him. They've got him, and they need to clear space. They've also got partners now, major partners. They've given up on the ratings game. They decided they can't win that. So they took the biggest money offer they could get. They put themselves behind a paywall. There are conditions to that paywall. And so they're working within that to try and make MLS is a thing. It's a business. It's in the truest Americanized sense, and it's protecting its interests. And it is not in its interest to have its players play in this competition. Its top players play in this competition. Now, they didn't have to do it this way. I don't know why they couldn't have been and take such a PR hit. Why they didn't just give a directive, a club memo to all saying you don't have to play your top players in this game, in this. And MLS would prefer you to make sure those players are fit and ready for League's Cup. And they could have, MLS teams could have continued to play weakened sides, smaller sides, and they could have done both. They picked the fight to kind of, I guess, to test things, probably for some other stuff coming down the line. Because we know what's coming down the line between them and US soccer. We know what's coming down the line. They have had their eyes south of the border for I don't know how long. They've always been looking for a way to integrate and to expand competitions against Mexican teams who have massive eyeballs in the United States. And they want more of that because they know there's more money in it than the domestic league. And they're looking to create something bigger. And they need to clear the forest, clear the pathway for that. That's what's happening. And yeah, this is the first kind of test. How can we clear space?
So where does this leave the state of the U.S. Open Cup? Are we kind of just back to where we started, where if you are a soccer fan in this country, expect MLS sides to field weakened squads until they wind up in the semifinals and then they decide to go for it? I mean, exactly. I think that's kind of where we are with this.
We're in exactly the same spot. Exactly the same spot.
Now, but we're also looking at it from an MLS perspective. It's a win for, you know, lower league sides, for the lower tiers in American soccer. This is a good thing for them because if they can advance, then there's more intrigue around their games against MLS teams that are actually fielding Messi and players like that. So,
it's a win for them, and it's also it's good to see US soccer standing up to MLS.
That
is a good thing because they are supposed to be the ruling body for the sport in America, and MLS should not be able to run roughshod over anyone or break anyone's dreams. Play by the rules if you're part of the club, and also they have the power of sanction. It would be hilarious if MLS did something and pushed ahead with something and US soccer said, fine, we're taking away your Division One sanction.
Oh my god.
It would essentially mean that a World Cup champion, a recent World Cup champion, and the most recent World Cup champion, and the greatest player in the world would be playing in a lower league or a non-sanctioned Division One league.
Right. So, you know, Messi joining non-league side Inter Miami this week. Yeah.
Exactly. So it is a watch this space, though, but I feel as if we are going to see more flashpoints over the next few years between U.S. soccer and MLS, as MLS moves to expand, not to expand, but to join and create competitions where it can create more money. Yeah. And we know where those teams are that draw that interest, and they're not in the United States.
No. While we're on the topic of MLS, JJ, and Miami specifically, earlier today, this morning. You might have seen Fabrizio Romano. Oh, he made waves. He tweeted the following. Luis Suarez to Inter Miami, all set to be sealed and announced. Here we go. Contract ready after verbal agreement reached 1 month ago. One-year deal for Suarez. Deal will also include an option for a further season. Messi and Suarez together again. Oh, so here we go, JJ.
So it's amazing because, well, it's not amazing. I think people could see this coming, but it's only, what, a month since Suarez did some radio interview about playing in Brazil with Grêmio and talking about how hard it is for him to continue to play top-flight football, how much pain he's in, the amount of painkillers he has to take to get on the field. You know, it seems mammoth. It was tweeted out. I remember we retweeted it on the pod. And now here he is, rocking up for Inter Miami.
Yeah. Well, I'll say this about it.
There's a lot of people who will be talking again, that old chestnut, the retirement league, because it's certainly, again, it goes against the trends of MLS in the past 10 years, but Inter Miami are not operating. They're operating more on a once upon a time Galacticos 11.
Well, yeah, exactly. Here's what I'll say though, about the idea of it being a retirement league. I get why that would be the thought process, because this follows the natural pattern, aging player near the end of his career, seeing it out in America. However, you know, regardless of what Suarez said about the difficulty of continuing to play at a high level, he is not washed. So this is his Who Scored posted his statistics from this past season in Brazil. 17 goals, 11 assists, 52 key passes, 34 successful dribbles, 8 man of the match awards, and an overall rating of 7.35. Still really good. And I would expect those numbers to be comparable when he comes to MLS. Maybe he can even improve upon them and extend his career. So this is not like, if you want to see this as a retirement community type move, I get why you do, but he's not done by any stretch as a player. Now, the question will be physically, how can he hold up? Like, I think his skill set is still there where you can get numbers like that, but can he hold up to the rigors of an MLS season, to the travel, to the various surfaces you have to play on? And that's going to be Miami's issue all season long. Like, I look at it now, look, you know, I took heat for saying it, but you know, I viewed Inter Miami at the end of the season as probably the best team in the league, which felt uncomfortable to me because they weren't in the postseason. But the problem will be like, so that's how I view them coming into this year. Like you just threw out the term Galacticos, and that's kind of tongue in cheek, but this is sort of an MLS version of it. Messi, Suarez, Jordi Alba, Busquets, like, I mean, my God. So, you know, I know that they're at the end of their career, but we saw when they're healthy what this could look like. And it looked pretty damn cool and fun to watch and awesome. The only question is health. Can they hold up to it?
Yeah. And there were reports from a couple of places during the summer that that Suarez had asked Grêmio to retire. I think it was in June Suarez has said, I can't do this. I've got persistent knee pain. So if he thinks this is a step, he'll be shocked. In terms of the workload, MLS will not be a step down in terms of travel. And if his knees are in that bad a shape, then probably maybe he should retire. I'm not.
Or I would say if you are a fan of certain teams, don't expect to see him at your ground. Like if you're a Sounders fan, is he making that trip from Miami to Seattle to play on turf?
No, I don't think so. That's horrible turf. Horrible. Yeah, I don't know. I want to be excited about it because he's one of my favorite players of all time. Just what a player. And I am excited about it. But I don't know.
Who would you say in MLS he would be most likely to bite during his time here?
Well, Chiellini's leaving. So
I think Jose Martinez.
Miazga.
Right. Jose Martinez of the Union would have been mine because he's such an Esther.
Yeah. Andrew, I'm not sure about this. I'm not. I'm trying to summon the excitement, but I'd have big concerns about his health. I mean,
yeah.
And that'll be no, and I, God, I have concerns about Messi's health going into next season.
Yeah, I know. But, although Messi will have had a lot of time to recuperate and rest. So, but the question won't be at the start of the season. Yeah, the start of the season, I'm sure he'll be shot out of a cannon. It'll be 2-3 months in. You know, that when we're getting closer to Copa America, that kind of stuff. That's when the concerns start to hit. But in the meantime, sure. I am excited. And Inter Miami, if their goal is to be must-see TV, you've reeled me in. You got me. I'll be a sucker for it. And if they're on, I'll be watching. Before we get out, JJ, all of these guys, Messi, Suarez, maybe not Jordi Alba, Busquets, these all would have been in their prime top 100 players. So I wanted to tell you, The Guardian just released their list of the 100 best male footballers in the world from the year 2023. You want to make any guesses? Top 100 in 2023.
Wow. I mean, is Messi still in the top 100?
He's number 10. He's top 10. Okay. You were wondering if he's still in the top 100?
Well, you don't know, Andrew. You just don't know. These lists, I would say...
I trust The Guardian. I think they have a good panel of people.
No, I do. And Jonathan Wilson will have been involved, I'm sure. I'm sure that the Soup du Jour... Well, last season, Soup du Jour, Erling Haaland will be there.
Number one.
Okay.
Haaland is number one.
I'm sure Jude Bellingham is in there, is he?
Number two.
They're standard ones that just aren't going to be outside. So Mbappe will be
number
there.
Number three.
There we go. Is Mo Salah in the top 10?
Number seven.
All right. Let me think. Oh, well, Bayern Munich's Harry Kane will be in floating around.
Number four.
Number four.
Yeah.
Interesting. And then the best player at Real Madrid will have to be in there. That's Vinicius.
Number six, although I would contend that Bellingham might be, but...
Well, no, best attacking player, I should say.
Okay, yeah, Vinicius is six. You skipped over five. You've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7, 10. You're doing great. Although you did suggest that Messi might be out of the top 100, but we'll let that
I yeah, but like...
I know.
I guess that's because he's where he is right now, I suppose. Oh, I don't know. I'm running out of road here.
Okay.
You're going to have to help me with the last three.
Number five and number eight are both Manchester City players.
Kevin De Bruyne?
He's eighth.
How? He hardly plays anymore.
When he does, though, okay. JJ, he's still spectacular.
He's very, very, he's damn good. Yeah.
And number five.
Who's the other City player?
Rodri. They have as the fifth best player in the world this year.
Oh, well, I suppose Champions League treble is going to get you into that area. Okay, I can't.
Number nine. What's a hint that I could give? Maybe if you had to list your favorite team from this season, from 2023 year, you can make a case he was their best player. Like, from a like fun story standpoint.
My fun story, like something, the team I've enjoyed.
You and I think a lot of people.
Oh, Napoli.
Yeah.
Kvaratskhelia.
No, he comes in at 12.
Osimhen.
Yeah, they have him ninth. There's your top 10. Haaland, Bellingham, right, Mbappe, okay. Kane, Rodri, Vinicius, Salah, De Bruyne, Osimhen, Messi. Good for MLS getting a player in the top 10 in the world.
MLS got him in there, all right.
Just looking through any more notables. Musiala at 20. Musiala, I feel like he should be a little higher up than that for what he meant to Bayern.
Musiala at 20. Huh.
Like some of the guys ahead of him, I don't know, like, is Odegaard better than Musiala? Is Lautaro Martinez better than Musiala?
I think Odegaard, if Odegaard's ahead, it's because he finished second in the top league in Europe.
Yeah, he's 18. Odegaard is 18. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. These lists are often weird. That list threw me a bit.
I'm trying to find the top goalkeeper. I see Ter Stegen at 34.
Emi Martinez demands to be there.
Oh, Ederson at 23.
All right.
So there you go.
What else we got, Andrew? Apart from the list.
Yeah, no, no. But I enjoy this. It's a fun list. I wonder.
You like a list? You do love a list.
Number 100, by the way, was Marcus Thuram, in case you were wondering. I'll tell you what. You can think more about the list. I don't mean to do promotional copy for the Guardian, but if you want to see the whole thing, go to their website, because it's interesting just to kind of look back and see who. Darwin Núñez, JJ, 78. One behind. So James Maddison and Darwin Núñez, they essentially have the same. Come on. Anyway. We'll go ahead. We'll take a break. We'll come back. We've got a lot more news and notes of things that have happened around Europe, all over the globe from the past few days. More Caught Offside still to come.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Oh, back now on Caught Offside. JJ, I know you mentioned at the start of the show you've been shipping out the initial batch of t-shirts, which is awesome. Like you said, I can't wait to see people starting to post their pictures. And like we said, in January, that's going to be opened up and hopefully will be full launch. And
we might have winter items as well.
Oh my God. Oh my, easy. Let's walk before we run. Okay. Oh man, this is a lot, but I can't wait. I can't wait to get mine. That should be a lot of fun, but it got me thinking about something, JJ, because this is a time of year when people are giving, they're shipping things all around the world to people. And I've been thinking about that with regards to myself. So bear with me for a sec, but like there are certain situations where people that are like normal, not complicated situations, like it's not like I'm asking you to perform brain surgery or anything like that, but some situations sometimes leave people feeling utterly lost. Like you'll feel it a little bit if you walk up to the counter at like a Dunkin' Donuts and you haven't thought about what you want to order. And it's like, oh my God, that rush of fright hits you. Some people feel it in a car dealership when they walk in. They're just like, oh my God, I don't know what to do here. Maybe I'm weird or pathetic. And I want to know if other people agree and can relate. For me, that feeling, it's mailing a package. It's mailing a package. And I need help. Maybe the animals can help me and they can give me some kind of cheat sheet. I mean, I've been mailing packages forever, but I still will walk into a post office or whatever and feel just lost. I'm renewing my passport. So I went and yesterday when I went to the post office, I had the wrong envelope. So I had to tear up what I had used and go to the back of the line and find a different kind of envelope that you're supposed to use. Do I need tracking?
You're saying it weird. Why do you say envelope?
You can't even say envelope. I don't know. Vase, Voss. I don't know. do I need a tracking number? Do I put my own postage on it? Or do they? What is priority mail versus certified mail? What is priority mail express? When do I, for the passport, I could only use the U.S. Postal Service. But what's the difference between them and FedEx and UPS? I don't understand any of it. I literally, maybe this says something about me. I swear to God, JJ, when I know that I have to send a package, I get literal anxiety. I get truly nervous and have to like psych myself up as I walk out of my car into the post office. I don't get how to do any of it. I'm pathetic.
I'm telling you,
animals, help me. Send me a cheat sheet with a simple explanation of how to send a package.
I had the same feeling, the exact same feeling throughout this process. I've become my own small shipping company. I've had to learn about using ShipStation. I've had to learn about the difference between what's insured under USPS Ground Advantage, all this stuff, and going to the post office Andrew, the last 2 weeks, I can guide you through it. We'll take some time when we're not talking about football. I'll sit you down. But before this, yeah, definitely hadn't a clue what I was doing. Felt like I was way overpaying for packages just to make sure they got there. I had all sorts of tracking on them, GPS location, whatever. But you know, being my own small business, you definitely kind of begin to learn the do's and don'ts. And I'll walk you through it.
It's just one of those, like, I was waiting in line myself, and like some guy, really like regal looking, had a beard, just like, you know, I really revered him. And he walks in with two huge boxes, and he doesn't even talk to anyone, just put them down on the counter, hey, express or whatever. I don't even know what he said. And then he walked right out. I was like, oh my God, take me with you. Can I follow you for a week and just learn the ways of how to exist in this world? Cause I'm doing it wrong. He walked in there with all this confidence, and I was terrified. I need help.
I will say government agency offices, post office, any of those, they DMV, you learn some things about yourself.
I need help. JJ, let's go through some of the news and notes happening primarily around Europe. Don't need to go too deeply into this, but at least want to just mention them, because by the time you're listening to this, these things have probably happened already. But Manchester City is facing Fluminense later today in the Club World Cup final. And Aston Villa are facing Sheffield United later today, looking to go top of the table. Villa, at the end of December.
This is amazing. What a story. I remember when Villa were top of the table around this time of year, and it was, okay, I'm not going to say this was the last time, but I reckon it was the last time. 1998, going into 99. So Christmas 1998, I think Villa were top under John Gregory. And of course, United went on to win the league. But it's that long ago since they were top at this time of year. It's amazing what a job Unai Emery has done.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And you'd expect him to do it, again, facing Sheffield United. So, yeah, unbelievable stuff. And we'll see if City can beat Fluminense, as I would anticipate they would. But you never know. Fluminense, that probably means a whole hell of a lot more to them than it would Manchester City. So, who knows? JJ, Fulham, Chelsea, Liverpool, and Middlesbrough all advanced to the Carabao Cup semifinals. Just a few. I'm not going to go into these games in any real depth.
You can't do that because I didn't see any of them. I was traveling. That's unfair.
Okay, I said I wasn't going to. And I gave you a free out.
You always
out.
Say that, and then you launch into a 15 minutes on each game.
I gave you a free out, and then you went and admitted to everybody anyway for no reason that you didn't watch them, that you were once again irresponsible and unprofessional. So
I was traveling, you D.
So Everton lost to Fulham on penalties. Amadou Onana.
I did see that on Twitter.
So does that penalty? Now, I will also reveal something here. I didn't see it live. I heard about his penalty miss before I actually saw it, and I heard how disgraceful it was, and it is horrible. However, I was picturing much worse based on the criticism it was getting, and I'm wondering, is it bad enough? Does it go into the bad penalty kick Hall of Fame, or is it not quite to that level? It does. Okay.
Oh yes, it absolutely does. It's not as bad as Simone as Zaza.
Yes.
That it's not as bad as that, but it's in that kind of ballpark. It's in that genre.
Okay.
That elaborate of a run up must produce something.
You can't roll a ball at 2 miles an hour.
You can't.
Yeah.
You know those videos where so on TikTok someone goes, "Oh, my cat is a goalkeeper," and he starts pinging tennis balls at his cat, and the cat's really agile in that. You know, mm-hmm. That's a cat would have saved that. Like no problem. Pick any cat.
I would say my bad penalty kick Hall of Fame, and I would highly encourage the animals and people on Twitter or X, send us yours. I would say Zaza, you nailed it. Absolutely. He's a first bout bad penalty kick Hall of Famer. Jason Punchin had one that...
That's right, for Crystal Palace.
Oh my God. I thought he kicked it out of the stadium.
So high and so wide. It was a thing of beauty.
Yeah, I almost kicked it out, literally out of the stadium. It was incredible. And then I would just simply say anyone who has ever missed a penalty on a Panenka by having a keeper catch it. Like that goes, you're ushered right this way, sir. You are a first ballot bad penalty kick Hall of Famer. I'd like to see other ones, so feel free to send them to us. JJ, West Ham. Now, there's a little bit to say here. They make 6 changes to their lineup, and they get smashed to bits by Liverpool, who in fairness also made changes to their lineup, but there's a clear difference between the West Ham changes versus the Liverpool ones. Liverpool are just a bigger club and have more depth. And Moyes is getting, he's getting hit pretty hard for it. He's been criticized over the last 48, 72 hours or so for that decision-making. Before we give our opinion, here's what he said when he was initially asked about that decision.
I think it's a pretty cheap question to ask when we've played. I think the only teams who've played more games in the league over 3 years is Liverpool and Man City. We've played more games. We've had the quickest turnaround of any of the teams in the Premier League, only 2 days, and we've played more games. I don't rotate very often because of the level of the games. And I had to find a way of finding out what players were going to be good for me. Get into a Christmas period and I'm about to lose some players for the African nations. So it was really important that I try and find that out. And tonight we gave some players opportunities. I don't think it was to do with that. Tonight was to do with how good Liverpool were and how good they played. So you can talk about us and you can talk about the rotation. But if you're going to talk about the rotation, you better talk about the amount of games we've played more than other teams and also the amount of quick turnarounds we've had compared to other teams. It would be unfair to do that without that.
So that's David Moyes on the decision to make those kinds of changes. And while I do get his point, there's a couple things that I would say about it, JJ. First off, like, I don't know, call me crazy, but this felt like a real tangible moment for West Ham to win a trophy. Like, City and Arsenal are out of this thing already. You're playing right. Liverpool. So, like, if you field your best team and Liverpool are making changes, again, Liverpool will be favored. There's no question about that. But it's not the most, it wouldn't be the most incredible upset any of us have ever seen, not by a long shot. If you beat Liverpool, the toughest team left is a mid-table Chelsea side right now. Like, there's a world where West Ham could have looked at this game like the final. Had they won it, they'd be facing Fulham next. Fulham good, but very winnable. So, like, I don't know. What's he saving his players for? Like, they're not going to qualify for top four. I don't care where they are right now in the table. Like, that's not really, like, this is a chance right here in front of them. They're at the quarterfinal stage, like, and you're playing Liverpool. If you win this, you're kind of, the path has sort of been carved for you. So I don't know. And like, I know it's not exactly what he's doing, but managers complain about match congestion all the time. And sometimes I don't always know what they're upset about. Like, do they not understand that the nature of tournament play is the more you win, the more games you have to play? Like, that's just kind of it. Like, what do they expect some of these football governing bodies to do? Like, you can't invent more dates to the calendar. You're not going to have a nine-day week so a team can play more. Like, I get when Klopp is mad about having to play an early game on a Saturday because that's someone making a subjective decision to put them there. But this is just like teams advancing in a tournament. So I don't know. And again, he wasn't really mad about having to play the game. He's just explaining the difficulty of what did they play? Like 7 games in 21 days or something? Like, yeah, you've won. You're in Europe. You've gone far in this competition. It's kind of, I don't know who to be mad at here.
The argument with Moyes now and West Ham fans is they've had enough. West Ham fans have had enough of them. Even when they were going good last season in Europe, there was complaints about the league form. There's complaints about the style of play. Okay, he's rested players for this game. They get absolutely walloped. This is more than that, though. It's more than that. They genuinely just think this thing has gone as far as it can. The European win last year was absolutely brilliant. But even in that season, around the club, I talked to my brother-in-law. He kind of just feels, look, we've had a good run with him, but it's probably time to go now. You know, the style of play has been enraging West Ham fans for a long time. They do win games. They won against Tottenham. They are a decent side, but they are still super conservative. And the general feeling is that he can get more from the players he's got, and they're not doing that. And it's one of those inflection points. And I know Moyes is frustrated. He said, we're in a world where people want things to be better quickly. I'm finding that hard to see unless a country comes and gives you the finances. We're on a brilliant one. We're 1 point off our best ever points total in the Premier League. I have to say that's a remarkable achievement for us and to have qualified for Europe. I don't know what else would be expected.
Wait, there. Just to go back to something you said there, there's a feeling from West Ham fans that he's not getting the most out of these players. They just won a trophy. They just got to the quarterfinals of this competition. They're ninth right now on the table. All of this after having just gotten rid of Declan Rice, their best player of like the last...
Andrew, they've never been fully in on Moyes.
Yeah.
Not entirely as a unit. And we know this. Not the first time. Certainly when he was reappointed, it's been much, much better. They've enjoyed their time, but it's not been universal or unanimous, and there's been a very noisy and sizable contingent that have wanted him gone, even after last season, the way the season finished with the trophy. It's just the way it is, and we've seen how West Ham United fans can be, and I don't see this ending well.
Oh, interesting.
But yeah. I think he'll get to the end of the season, but I think there will be a change.
But you didn't really answer the initial question. How do you feel about him resting the six players?
I wouldn't have done it. Yeah. I wouldn't have done it. But he's got his eye on something else. I think, you know, you say he's won, you know, there's a chance to win a trophy. The way he'd look at it is, well, I won the trophy last season. You know, now it's time for a high league finish. And it did. If they could have got past Liverpool, it would have opened up for them for sure.
Yeah.
I do think that was the wrong decision. I do think he should have played the strongest team. To go and play Liverpool at Anfield in the quarterfinals of any competition, you play your strongest team. And I think he got it wrong.
I think so, too. Let's see, JJ. Chelsea, they snuck past Newcastle. Kieran Trippier, I mean, this is a nightmare run of form that you don't see very often from players of this caliber. He came on, made an error that led to Chelsea's tying goal in stoppage time, and then he missed his penalty. And, you know, we've been talking about him for weeks now, going back to, like, the Tottenham game when Son just took him to school a couple times. It's gone on since. I don't know what – I mean, he has sort of become the living embodiment of just how exhausted Newcastle are. Like, he is the one that you're seeing it in more than anyone else. And I love him. Like, I think he's a great player and he's been a great signing for them. But I mean, this guy just needs a break. My goodness.
Yeah. It's what you prescribed for Onana. And it's easier to do it to a fullback. Take him off the team, give him a break. I totally agree with you.
Now here's, I do have one question.
This
for
is
you.
A very good player having like, it's, you know, it's not a guy where you, oh, God, I've never really fancied him. You know, and now he's in a terrible run of form. Why is he in the side? He's in the side because he's had to be. And this side is jaded. And this side is absolutely jaded and he needs a rest.
Yeah. So here's my question for you. So the mistake he made in stoppage time, it led to Mudryk scoring the equalizing goal and sending it to penalties. So afterwards, Mykhailo Mudryk posts on Instagram and he said, Kieran, just want to say to you, stay strong. Sometimes the S... is happens, but I think you are a strong footballer no matter what. So we live in a skeptical, jaded world. If you're Trippier, are you grateful for him sending that? Or are you thinking, I don't need to be patronized by you. Leave me alone.
I think he probably appreciates it, but he also probably doesn't want to hear it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I keep going back and forth. Like if someone kind of embarrassed me in that way, would I want that person to then put a public message out there like patting me on the head? I don't think I need that. I don't think
I think that's why in football it would have been easy to get his cell phone number and just text him or something.
And by the way, I don't mean it as a slight to Mudryk. I think his heart was absolutely in the right place. I think so too,
but you've got to read the room a bit. You've just mugged him, and it's not his first mistake. It's now he's made him he's directly contributed to what, 7 or 6 goals in the last 3 games?
It's crazy. It's crazy.
So leave him alone.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of Chelsea, Reece James undergoing surgery. Going to be out for an extended period of time now. Could be a couple months.
We can categorize him now as one of those players.
This sucks, man. Since he tore his ACL, I mean, this is now just like a couple years ruined. In his prime, as he's, you know, become Chelsea's captain, their best player, 2 years of the best version of Reece James gone, wiped out through these hamstring injuries. And it's been really hard for him. And he posted this. He said, since this injury, I've had a good amount of support, but significantly more hate and negativity. Believe me, I don't want to be injured. I'm happiest when I'm playing football. God, you feel terrible for somebody who's like going through by far the most difficult challenge of their professional career. And then when they need support the most, they got to go on Twitter or social media or anywhere and they're getting ripped for it. Like, I don't know. I know, yeah, I'll be told, stop babying these guys. They make millions of dollars. All right. Well, they're also people, and I'm not going to remove them from being that. And I feel bad when I see stuff like that. So, yeah.
I feel the same way. It happened with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. His father had to come to his defense. Calvert-Lewin genuinely injured, wanted to play, and apparently was getting abuse from Everton fans, and his father heard it during the game. So that is something that, I don't know, I've never understood that in football, but it's a real thing. Anything else?
One last bit here. Liverpool are going to host Arsenal this weekend, and in what up to this point, you can make a case, given the way the table is kind of shaking out, it's the most important match of the season. So I bring this up because the other day after Liverpool beat West Ham, Klopp was not pleased, not with his team. He was very, very happy with how his team performed, as he should be. They won 5-1 and advanced to a semifinal. No. He was very upset with the performance of the fans. Here's Jurgen.
But I have to say, it's long ago that I said it, but I thought in the first half a little bit when the boys played really exceptional, I was not overly happy, I have to say it now, with the atmosphere behind me. I don't know. I ask people, what do we want? So we changed a lot of things. We dominated West Ham like crazy. We missed chances. And if I would be in the stand, I would be on my toes, about 1,000%. And I don't know if the Man United game was that bad that we have to say, oh, sorry, that we didn't smash them. We need Anfield on Saturday. Without Anfield, I would say they didn't play this week, just to make sure I know. Sorry, they didn't play. They prepare for this game, and who knows a little bit about them, they will be prepared. So we need Anfield on their toes from the first second, without me having an argument with the opposition coach, whatever. We need you from the first second. So if you really want, if it's too much football in December, I don't know. Sorry, we have to play it as well. But if you are not in the right shape, give your ticket to somebody else.
JJ, I cede the floor to you.
Yeah, I didn't enjoy that from Jurgen. I see his point, and I've spoken before about how there's certain grounds now that just aren't the febrile atmospheres of years gone by. Old Trafford, Anfield often come to mind when people go to games and they notice that, oh, this isn't the Premier League atmosphere, the stands heaving with people singing songs and just a general electric atmosphere. He talks about not coming, like, this isn't the first time we've heard it from Klopp. We've seen him in game talk about or try to gesticulate towards the crowd to get them up. Come on, as if he's not happy with it. Like, he has admonished the fans before. He talks about give your ticket to someone else. John Gibbons from the Anfield Rap made the point about doing that. He said, I reckon if I sat Jurgen down and explained to him the process around giving someone a ticket who hasn't been before, his head would fall off. I mean, it's never been harder, actually, to give someone else a ticket to a football match, transferring, especially if it's a season ticket. Clubs are very tight with stuff like that. I think it's one of those where Klopp is perhaps, I would have kept that to myself. You know, there's ways of doing it. Pep Guardiola does it a lot about City fans. Guardiola is never afraid to kind of say to City, that was quiet, or we need our fans, we need them to be, so good, so loud. But sometimes I wonder about that, about admonishing the fans and where that's going to get you long term.
Well, I'll say this, spirit of Shankly, Liverpool supporters group, came out and have, quote, no argument with Klopp's criticism. They said, we have no argument with Jurgen Klopp highlighting issues around the Anfield atmosphere or lack of it at times. It's something right. Our fans discuss regularly. It is central to the club's and Anfield's identity and something the most passionate among us are keen to protect. It is no accident that opposing teams, coaches, and fans speak about the Anfield effect. We all know how intimidating the crowd can make it for visiting sides, how the atmosphere can be second to none. We do have concerns, though, about the lack of opportunities for young supporters to go to the game, catch the bug, and preserve this decades-long culture of the cop. They go into
and that is a problem. Yeah. That's a problem, though, Andrew, that locals are priced out of the game.
Right.
Exactly the people who are passionate,
who will create that atmosphere that Klopp is craving.
Look, no disrespect to anyone here, but your fan, your supporters, your football tourists from Japan, or Stacy and Ryan from Wisconsin, who are just excited to be there. They're sat there, they're looking around them. You put 4.5, 5,000, 10,000, 12,000, 15,000 of those type of people in the ground, your atmosphere is done. You're going to kill it.
Yeah, they the statement goes on to say deep-rooted worries that our culture is being watered down by greater corporate offerings and out-of-reach ticket prices echoed by supporters across the Premier League.
That is, so,
they agree with Klopp, but then they sort of push it back to the club and say, well, this is...
But it is the club, and it's the Premier League. And again, you hear Americans, and not just Americans, like fans from everywhere, say, oh, I'd love to go to a game or whatever. Fine. But, you know, and they say how hard it is to get tickets. It should be hard, but it's not hard in the right way. Mm-hmm. It should be hard for people who are not from the local community to go to those games. It just should be. It needs to be full and stocked with players, locals. And Gary Neville talked about this, about the Man United atmosphere. He said Manchester United are a big enough club, a rich enough club, that they should be able to get young supporters from the greater Manchester region, from Salford, from all those places, into games and at a discounted rate. And I think the same applies for Liverpool. But again, we're talking about MLS selling its product. It's all about money. Premier League's no different. And the foreign fan will pay because it's a one-off. Foreign fan will pay huge amounts of money to try and experience the Premier League. But the knock-on effect is that the more of those fans you have in the stands, the less experience there is to experience.
Interesting. That's a beautiful Christmas story to end on, JJ. I hope you have a lovely time in Ireland with your family.
Thank you.
I'm envious. It's going to be a great... How long are you there? 2 weeks?
No. Because we've got Roisin with us 6 months, I think 8 days is enough. Oh. So I just had Roisin on my lap right there during recording, and she started grabbing at wires.
Oh, God.
So I thought, oh, don't get on Andrew's bad side already.
No, Roisin. And she will. She will get on my bad side. What are you hoping to get for Christmas, JJ? Did you ask for anything, or is...
No, nothing. I've had the craziest year and the most amazing year in so many respects. So I don't... I'm honestly... If 15 or 14-year-old JJ... responded, what do you want for Christmas? Nothing. I'm just happy to be here. He would be, what?
Yeah.
You know, what are you saying? But 41-year-old JJ is just happy to be still with you all.
Yeah. I would like Adobe Audition. I've been editing this pod for the last over a year
I
now.
I keep telling you, we're a business.
Basic, free.
We're a business. Go and buy it. Let's go.
I need something
better.
Let's go
and buy it. Oh, God. Yeah, we've got to spend some money, you know.
Can Santa deliver that? How does that work? Will he have to email me? I don't understand. I'll figure that out after the pod.
Yeah, no. Listen, we'll upgrade for you, Andrew. I can't have you going through this. No, I enjoy this pod immensely. I want to wish all our listeners all around the world and all around America just the happiest season. And I hope your families are safe, healthy, happy, and you all have a wonderful time together. And thank you for, in our first year of independence, for being... so committed and so loyal and so much fun to interact with as well.
Absolutely. I echo all that. We'll be back, of course, next week. A lot of big matches over the weekend. I can't guarantee what day. I know Monday is Christmas Day, so you and I will have to chat, but we'll of course have pods next week where we'll look back on everything going on in this sport that we love. JJ, have a great Christmas. To you, I say,
check you later, fun boy.
I'll see ya.
Take care. Happy holidays.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.